And now it's time for Atlanta's Business, an in-depth look at Atlanta commerce, hosted by News Talk 1160 Vice President and General Manager Jeff Davis.
Today's guest on Atlanta's Business, Yossi Hollander.
So Yossi Hollander, I guess the question on everybody's minds right now seems to be oil prices, how much a barrel, this, that, and the other thing. Ultimately, how much are we paying at the pump? This morning on my way into work, I saw $1.64. That's the lowest I've seen in a long time. How much longer is this going to last?
First of all, it's great. Let's look at it, guys. We don't need more expensive gasoline. We want cheaper gasoline, or whatever it is. It could be just cheaper. We don't want to pay more. And I think it's great for the economy. If you money in your pocket, in people's pocket, is great. How long it will stay, I can't tell you. So if you tell me what's the price of oil in half a year, I mean, I don't think there's one person in the world that can tell you that. But if you ask me, is the price going up again, and much sooner than most people think, yeah, of course it does. And it's not because Saudi Arabia is doing that or that. It's because the people in China and the people in Indonesia and the people in India, they all want our lifestyle. And their economic situation is getting better. And they're buying cars. Last year, the amount of cars sold in the world grew by 6% just in 1 year. From 90 to 95 million cars in one
year. Cars are the major source of consumption of oil?
The majority of it, yes. So largely it's gasoline. In the United States, it's 70%. Some is diesel, trucks, etc. But there's between diesel and gasoline, you're probably 90% or more of oil consumption.
You know, you mentioned something to me before we started recording, Yossi Hollander, and that was that the U.S., contrary to popular belief, is not energy independent. People think for some reason or another, you know, we're not dependent on Iran or Saudi Arabia or Mexico, Venezuela, et cetera, Nigeria. Not true, huh?
Not true at all. The numbers are very simple. We still import a third of our oil. And it really doesn't matter who we import it from. So if we decided that we do not want to import anything anymore from Saudi Arabia, all it will mean is that we'll buy it from somebody else, and that contract will switch. The other country will now buy it from Saudi Arabia, but the price and the dollar they're getting in their pocket will be exactly the same. So it's not who we buy it from, it's what the price is. And this was great news for Americans, because instead of paying $500 billion a year for importing oil, we paid only $125 billion as a country to import oil. Mm. Part of it is because we have more production here, but part of it largely is because the prices went down. But we still import a third, and we still spent last year, okay, as people, $500 billion on oil and oil product. That's a big chunk in our money, in our pocket.
All right, so as the oil prices have been declining, so has the Dow Jones Industrial Average and NASDAQ, et cetera, et cetera. Is there a correlation between the two?
Well, if there is, I can't understand it. Just remember that all commodities prices are down, and they started going down about 2 years ago for the same reason. Oil was the last one to decline, and it's been declining for a while, and then the Dow started declining. So I'm not sure they're at all connected. I think every asset class was pretty expensive, and there may be a correction. I don't know. I'm not a stock expert. I can tell you that for the United States and for consumers, it's much better. Now, people ask, why is this cheap oil prices? Why don't they translate into more consumption? I think it's the level of debt. I mean, we have a lot of studies that show that there is always a delay. People first pay their debts, and when they feel a little bit more secure, then they start spending a little bit more. I think people have been accumulating a lot of debt over the last 10 years. And I think what's happening right now is they get more money in their pocket. They start paying their mortgage. They get, lower their credit card payments, etc. So I think that's what's more happening than anything else. But in terms of the oil influence, but I don't think oil is what's dragging the stock market down, although it's a common belief. Historically, and every time, I mean, when people had more money in their pocket, it didn't drag the stock market down.
We also hear, instability in China.
That affects a lot of the commodities. So it's not so much instability, as they're not growing as fast as they could. So they're not buying as much copper or iron, etc. But they're still buying a lot. And China is not the only place. If last year world oil demand grew by more than any other year in the last 20 or 30 years. So it almost doubled the previous year. And it's not coming from China. It's coming as part of it from China, but it's coming from Indonesia and from Vietnam and from India. Everybody just keeps growing. And because they start very low. You know, we have tons of cars here, 250 million. That's a quarter of the world's car. We're only 300 billion, okay? 5% of the
world. Yeah, we're about 330 million people. And between China and India, it's probably another 3 billion.
Right, exactly.
We're tiny.
As those countries, as they move along on the growth curve, they will want car. It's natural. When people reach in the world about $20,000 a year annual income, they want a car. Why? Because they can.
Yossi Hollander, you're a very successful guy. In fact, you're a philanthropist, which I think is wonderful. And you founded the Fuel Freedom Foundation. When did this happen?
That's about four and a half years ago. And our goal is to end our addiction to oil using no subsidies, using free market competition. And basically, we think that we have tons of fuels in the U.S. that we can use. We shouldn't be using just oil. I think one of the biggest secrets of the oil industry is that people don't pay attention to is that we have more natural gas than oil now. So for every barrel, so to speak, of oil we take out of a fracking well, we actually get more barrels. It's not barrel, but I mean equivalent in energy of natural gas and natural gas liquids like ethane and propane. And we have nothing to do with them because there's no market for them. So their prices keep dropping down and down and down. The price of natural gas in the United States right now is almost on an energy content basis a third or a sixth of the price of oil.
How do you feel about fracking?
I think fracking is just another technology, okay? I think like any oil well, I can do, you know, oil well very badly. See the example in the Gulf that we had the big spill, etc. And I can do 1,000 of well excellent and nothing happens. And even if I have some problem, I know very quickly how to fix it. Fracking is exactly the same thing. I can do some bad fracking well that will pollute the water and do all kinds of issues. But most people know how to do fracking correctly, and it's safe just like anything else. So I think it's a great thing. I think all the world is starting to frack. And what it does is actually not so much more oil as much as it is more gas. And if we can take that gas and use it in transportation either directly or as if another fuel, converting it to other fuels, that is the big game changer. This is huge investment and huge amount of jobs in the United States and cheaper fuel forever.
Is Fuel Freedom Foundation involved in this, in the natural gas arena?
As well. I mean, we're not an investor in the natural gas. We're actually fuel agnostic, okay? So we don't care if you make ethanol from natural gas, garbage, or corn. It's not our business, okay? We're not... You decide what you want to do. I mean, consumers will decide what they want to buy, and manufacturers decide what they want to do if they can make money. We think all those options are on the table, and corn from ethanol right now is still cheaper than gasoline that without subsidies. That's the interesting thing because it just got better. But the key numbers, the big, big number is that we have it's natural gas to ethanol and methanol, which is also another liquid fuel. Those are the big numbers.
It's interesting in the weeks leading up to the Iowa caucuses. So ethanol was an issue, you know, whether Ted Cruz was in favor of it or against it. I mean, this, that, and the other thing. But, you know, I think most Americans don't understand it. You know, we just know that we go to the gas station, we, you know, pay our $1.64 a gallon for oil. We don't realize, in other words, how do we translate corn into fuel for our car?
So corn, people grow corn because they don't grow corn for ethanol, they grow corn for money. Now, what can they do? They do use some of it for ethanol. Some of it they use for, so half of the corn goes, the starch goes to, becomes ethanol. The protein become animal food. It's actually today, I think, more profitable than ethanol probably, but it's a combination, okay? Then they take the CO2 from the fermentation, it's in your Coca-Cola, okay? So they sell whatever they can produce, and they make money from selling everything together. It's not one industry that you don't grow ethanol on the ground. You grow corn that you can make many things from. But nobody said that you can make ethanol just from corn. You can make it from natural gas. We have now the technology to do that at less than $1 a gallon. So I think those are issues that will, as more people become aware of that and become aware that they can put ethanol or methanol later and other fuels in their car, you know, your car should be free. I mean, the government doesn't tell you what to eat for breakfast or lunch. They only make sure it's clean. You know, by general regulation, they don't check your food before every time, but it's generally clean. And you decide what you put in your stomach. Why shouldn't you be able to decide what you can put in your car? Make it your decision, not the government's.
Well, how soon are these fuels coming to the pump? Ethanol, methanol?
So it all depends where. So, for example, your fuel contains 10% ethanol regardless. That's the mandate everybody's arguing in Iowa in all the election, whether it's good or bad. I'm not getting into that argument. You can argue for both sides. The fact it is, it's probably not going to go away for various reasons. And if it did go away, we needed another thing to increase the octane anyway. So it would probably be ethanol anyway, because our fuel is just too low octane. The oil the refineries produce, the gasoline, is just too low octane. So we need to put something in it to put it in normal octane. So the key issue with ethanol is that now we have also more of it, and we have E85 pumps. There used to be very few in the country. Now there's more than 3,000, which is about 2% of the pumps. But they're selling more gallons than gasoline pumps, those who put them on, because they're cheaper. And people buy cheaper, so it used to be a mom and pop's operation. Now it's a large corporation. If you look at HEB in Texas, tons of stations. You look at many chains starts to put ethanol in, and they make money. So that's all they care about, and that's what consumer care about.
What about electric cars? You know, I had great hopes for electric cars, but it just seems to have leveled off. You can only go maybe 100 miles or so, you know, before you need to recharge. You know, all the negatives that we hear, how come it hasn't taken off like Jeff Davis thought that perhaps it would?
So first of all, I love electric cars. Okay, to tell you, I have three. Okay, and once you have one that is good, you're like a Tesla, you're not going back. And I've had just about every car there is, okay, during my life. I'm not 20, yeah. Okay. But the key is that people don't understand the long-term effect. It is the fastest growing segment worldwide, okay, of the car industry. Electric cars and plug-in hybrid are growing. But even if they double every year for the next 20, 30 years, they're only going to start having an effect in 2040, 2035. Just a question of numbers, just to give you an idea, there were more than 90 million cars sold last year in the world. 90 million cars. Can you figure that number out? Wow.
I'm in the wrong business.
I don't know. Look at the car companies. They have their own problems. But yeah, 90 million new cars.
They get bailed out when they
don't. We don't. And we may need to bail them out again when the price of oil goes up again. But anyway, but electric cars, there were only 300,000. So although they're growing and although they're improving and they're getting cheaper and people get to know them better, etc., this is new. It takes time for things to penetrate. So I don't think there's anything wrong about what's going on. I think that even if it doubles or grows by 50% every year, which it will, okay, because there is a demand and there is reasons to do it. My secretary has a Volt. Okay, She pays less for lease oil and gas and electricity than she paid for gasoline before when the prices were a bit higher. Okay, but still, that includes the lease of the Volt. So it all depends what car. People ask, oh, but it doesn't do this for me. Yeah, but if you want a small car or a big car or a sports car or a truck, we have 1,000 models of cars because we have different needs. Electric car covers various needs right now, and as they get better and cheaper over time, they'll cover more and more. It is more convenient and much more fun to drive. That I can tell you. Everybody who had an electric car will tell you that. But I'm not expecting a lot from it in the next 20 years. Mm. Just numbers. It's a numbers game.
Yossi Hollander, many people listening right now hear your dialect, your very interesting dialect. Well, I happen to know that you're an Israeli. You're born and raised in Israel, I believe.
Correct.
And we know that many of the oil supplying countries of the world are, you know, kind of the bad neighborhoods. I said Nigeria before, and Venezuela, and Saudi Arabia, Libya, Iran. Is there some kind of relationship there between that fact and your motivation for founding the Fuel Freedom Foundation.
It is one of the motivations. I mean, but look, I live in Irvine, California now, and not far from me, about an hour drive, is San Bernardino, and which is like Dunwoody. It's like just a suburb, okay, of L.A. And who would have expected that a local person grew up there, lived there, worked there, gets up in the morning and kills his colleagues, mm-hmm. or in the evening, okay? So, and that is the same thing. It's not just that that neighborhood is no longer just Israel's neighborhood. It is our neighborhood here in Atlanta as well. And it's all funded. And it's all funded by Iran, funded by Saudi Arabia, and funded by Qatar. They fund extreme Islamist ideology that is the basis for all these radicals. That's where they get it from. So when they build a mosque that teaches them to hate us, that's what happens. So those are the, yes, we do want to defund them. I think this is a, should be a strategic goal of the United States. That's how we win wars. We didn't kill all the communists, you know, we defunded them.
There is a documentary movie called Pump. It was actually from Netflix, one of the top 11 documentaries to watch, 5-star rating. And you're heavily involved in the movie Pump. And from whence comes your involvement
I was one of the producers of the movie. And we wanted to tell the Earl story, both how we got here and why our situation is so bad, and then how we can get out of it. I tell to people this is basically a movie about our love for the car and how we've been taken for a ride. And I think even experts, I remember there's a guy here from Atlanta, watched the movie, he's really involved in the oil and alternative business for 20 years. He says, there were so many things I learned from that movie that I didn't know. We did a lot of research. We filmed it around the world. And we show why we are here. How did we get here from the 20s, from the beginnings? Why are we so addicted to oil? So the pluses and the minuses, okay? We're not like, oil is a good thing, okay? It allowed us transportation, commerce, everything. Without oil or some other fuel today, we would be still very primitive society. We'll be on horses. That's not that great. So I think I wouldn't go back there. But we also show how it affects our economy, our environment, our pollution, the air we breathe, the soldier we send to die. There's a guy on the movie that says, you know, if Kuwait grew broccoli, we probably wouldn't be sending any soldiers there. So we don't want to send our kids to die protecting the oil. We don't want to have to fight ISIS number 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, because that's what continue to come unless we take care of the ideology. And the way to take the ideology is to defund it. And it will affect Israel, it will affect America, it will affect the Western world, but it will affect mostly also the Muslim world. People forget that most people are killed right now in Syria. 500,000 people killed, there are Muslims and Christians. 500,000 people killed, just one place.
Yeah, I just read that the other day. 470,000, I think, was the estimate. It's staggering. Hey, I want to ask you, I'm digressing here, Yossi Hollander, but because you are an Israeli, though you reside in Irvine, California now, are you optimistic about the future of Israel?
I am. And now, is there a future without dangers? I don't think so. I think there's a lot of dangers. We have our own dangers, etc. Am I optimistic about the United States? Yes. Does it mean we don't have problems? Yeah. I always say in the United States here, we're the tallest midget in the room. Okay. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't be trying to be better, but it's all relative. And I think Israel relatively is a good place for a simple reason. It's a growing country, both population and economically. It's a free country. And with all the other problems, there's a lot of technologies, there's a lot of tourism, there's a lot of stuff happening. So I think it's a country in a good trajectory. It doesn't mean that there are no dangers. We have dangers everywhere, but I think it's in a good place.
And the technology is amazing. You know, it's a country of 8 million people. That's it. You can't even find it on a map. If you don't know where it is, if you don't know where to look, you'll never find it. That's how small it is.
Right.
For one reason or another, it receives a lot of attention from the rest of the world, perhaps unduly, but it receives a lot of attention. But the technology that comes out of Israel just amazes me. Biomedical.
It's survival, you know. It's part of it is that a lot of educated people, the number of people with academic degrees, I think, is 1 or 2 in the world right now. And a lot of it is education, but also survival. You have to do things, okay, to survive. A lot of people talk about Israeli businessmen, you know, they have to learn to do things in tough, good times, etc. I remember when missiles were falling, you keep the factory open, you do things, you figure out how to do things. So I think it helps. Maybe too ragged sometimes, not as smooth in marketing, but people learn, and that's why the Israeli high-tech industry is so strong.
So we're just about out of time, Yossi Hollander. Coming off the great success you've had with Pump, where do you go from here? You know, look ahead, tell us what we can expect from
the Fuel Freedom Foundation. Our goal is to have some tests in some states, whether it's California or other states, where more people can move into E85 and M85 and other fuels. And we don't want to force them. We want to have options at the pump. I want you to be able to go to your pump, and I'll have three different fuels, and I'll look at the price and decide what I want to put in my car. I don't want the government to tell me. I want it to be my decision. And that's what we're trying to do. So we work a lot with distributors. We work a lot now with natural gas manufacturers to build ethanol and methanol facilities around the country. We're trying to remove the regulations so you can modify your car. Because one of the keys that your current car, and you're going to see it in the movie in much more detail, your current car can actually take more fuels with just software changes. And that's very, very interesting because we want to actually make that legal. So you can go out there, change your car, and now it can take any other fuel.
Catalytic converter?
Yeah, it's not that it convert the car. You convert the car to take many fuels. So I can go to the pump. It has E85 that is $1 cheaper. Half a dollar cheaper. I'm going to put E85. I travel to Augusta, and they still have only gasoline. I can put gasoline in the car. I'm not dependent on one fuel. It is my choice. The car can take all of them at the same time.
Well, we're out of time, Yossi Hollander. You know, I love what you do. I remember, I'm old enough to remember rationing, you know, after the 1973 war.
And it's in the movie.
And boy, it was a tough time. And people's, you know, frayed people's nerves. There were even riots in various places. It was not a good situation. I remember it distinctly. And that's why I fully support your efforts. And again, I love what you do. I think you're an amazing guy. Folks, go to www.fuelfreedom.org. www.fuelfreedom.org or visit their Facebook page, Fuel Freedom Foundation. Fuel Freedom Foundation. Yossi Hollander, native of Israel, resident of Irvine, California, and the brains behind Fuel Freedom Foundation. I want to thank you for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.